Hello, and a warm welcome to another episode of Turkey Book Talk. I'm William Armstrong, speaking to you from here in Istanbul. Thanks for tuning in. In this podcast, we hear from authors of newly released books on Turkey and the region. Subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, or Acast. Like the Facebook page, follow the Twitter account at Turkey Book Talk. Check out show notes and links at armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com and rate or review the podcast wherever you listen to it, which helps more people find it. Remember to consider joining as a member to support Turkey Book Talk. Membership gives you various exciting extras. They include an archive of a whopping 231 book reviews written by myself, covering various categories including Turkish and international fiction and poetry, history, politics, journalism, the Middle East and Europe. The archive was written over the course of 5 years and was previously available online, but now a Turkey Book Talk membership is the only way to access it. Members also receive transcripts in both English and Turkish of every interview published on Turkey Book Talk via email as soon as the episode is published. Membership also gets you transcripts of the entire Turkey Book Talk archive, which so far amounts to well over 70 conversations and 250,000 words. That archive also includes a number of interviews not previously published on the podcast. And finally, members also get access to a very nice 30% discount on Turkey Ottoman history books published by IB Taurus. IB Taurus have a terrific archive of titles, and they've kindly made over 200 books from their Turkey Ottoman history series, both academic and general interest, available at cut price, exclusive to Turkey Book Talk members through a special discount code. A number of IB Taurus authors have appeared on the podcast so far, so becoming a member is a great way to get more acquainted with their work. To become a member and help us keep going, just pledge a minimum of $3 per episode via Turkey Book Talk's official Patreon account, which you can find a link to at armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com or by doing a quick Google search. At present, we post new episodes every 2 weeks, so the monthly membership price is no more than $6. Of course, if you're feeling particularly generous and want to pledge more, then you'll certainly be more than welcome. But so long as you pledge $3 or above per episode, membership is entirely at your own discretion. Members only get charged when a new episode is published, so there are no prior commitments or strings attached. You'll be free to sign off whenever you want. But now let's get on with our latest episode. In it, we hear from Laura Sara, who returns to the podcast after an appearance last year. She's an editor at the Aras Publishing House, which is based in Istanbul, and focuses on publishing fiction and non-fiction translated from Armenian, as well as original books written on areas of Armenian interest. Among the books that Aras has recently published is We Will Live After Babylon, a collection of stories written by Ara Güler, the legendary Armenian-origin Turkish photographer who passed away at the age of 90 in October, prompting grief in Turkey and obituaries around the world. Of course, Ara Güler is best known for his photographs of 20th century Istanbul, typically black and white, taken in the less salubrious and more evocative parts of the city. But the pieces collected in this volume were mostly written in the 1940s and 50s, before he even picked up a camera, and they make for a fascinating selection. The book is bigger than your average volume, handsomely illustrated with some of Ara Güler's beloved photos, and it all makes for a satisfying package. A bit later in this conversation with Laura Sara, we talk about the challenges faced by publishers in Turkey amid the recent economic turbulence, but we started by talking about Ara Güler, and I asked her to reflect on the reaction in Turkey to his passing back in October.
I think it was kind of expected because I saw him at the opening of the Atheum, and he wasn't what he used to be. Like, he was a very talkative person. He wouldn't mess with people, even though he wasn't physically capable of doing stuff. He wasn't like that anymore. You could see that. And when I heard about the news, the first thing I thought was, oh, he makes sure where his archive is, it's in good hands, and then he passed away. How cliche, and it just happened. I can talk about the Armenian world. They were pretty devastated because it's first Charles Aznavour died and then him. And the Armenian world is really proud of both of them. So they were pretty devastated. But of course, everyone in Turkey, because I can say in Turkey, besides he was a magnum photographer and he was a big name, when we're thinking about the 50s or 60s, like old times Istanbul, his images come straight to your mind. When you think think about old Istanbul, you imagine that world through his lenses. So he means a lot. And in the funeral, it wasn't he. First, he came to the Galatasaray Square, and then they took him to Uçhoran Church, an Armenian church, and he had the Turkish flag on his coffin because I think he was giving, a medal from the Turkish state. So, yeah. But I have not seen the funeral, actually.
Oh, so you didn't go?
No, I didn't go. I'm just something personal. I don't go to funerals, but I mean, I've seen it on Instagram. It was a thing, of course.
You mentioned that luckily he lived to see the opening of this new kind of museum-like archive of his work in Istanbul, which opened earlier this year, I believe. And I think you went to the opening. It was in the summer. Could you just describe the thinking behind the archive? You know, who was behind it and what is it?
It was on his 19th birthday, on 16th of August, I think it was. And a couple of years ago, there was news about him giving all his archive to Doğuş Holding, the big Doğuş company. And there were like two opinions about it. One were really relieved that they were in good hands, but some were not. And we knew about this archive and museum thing as Aras Publishing, because we had this book published years ago, and we wanted to republish it, but we wanted to add some photos. So we had to get in touch with these people. And that's why we work with them. And we believe it's in good hands. His archive is in good hands. They have good intentions, and they really want to take care of it. And the space, the museum, is really well done. You feel good in it. I was only there the opening day, and you know how the opening days are. It's really crowded, and then you can't really get to see much. But the space was good, and the people who work for the archive, it's in really good hands. I think the main reason behind it is because he has no family. He has this kind of assistant, really close person, not really relative, but the guy who also runs his cafe. So he's been really close with that, but you just can't live a whole archive to one person. It needs to be in a museum so that people can go and see his work and whatnot. So it's a really good project, I think.
I still haven't been able to visit, actually. It's very bad on my part. For those listeners who are thinking about going, is that's based at Bomontiada?
Yes, it's right across. When you enter the Bomontia, but although you will see it, it's just right there. It's very easy.
Now, coinciding quite neatly, actually, with the opening of the archive was the publishing of this book of newly collected writings by Güler, and it's called We Will Live After Babylon, and yeah. It's available in English and Turkish, and it's basically made up of various writings going back decades, really, some written in the 40s and 50s, really before he actually made the name for himself as a photographer. And he actually writes in a very brief preface to the collection that he wrote this his last short story in this book 59 years ago. So it's a pretty, in itself, it's kind of a museum piece, but it's very interesting. Just wonder if you could kind of introduce the book, really. It's published by Aras. How did the idea come about, and how did the whole publishing process emerge, I suppose?
Actually, we published it in Armenian, Turkish, and English. The original is in Armenian. In the 50s, the Armenian periodicals were a big thing. Our biggest names in the Western Armenian world, literature, they were all writing in these periodicals. And now, one of the things we do as Aras is to collect those writings and then turn them into books, or even the novels were published in pieces in those periodicals. So Arda Güler had also some short stories in those periodicals. So they thought back in 1995, 20 years ago, they thought of making this book, and they published it in 1995 in Armenian, and they again called it Papelon Enver Çbiliyat Ring, It's We'll Live After Babylon. And after a year, they translated it in Turkish. This is the first time we have translated it in English. That edition only had 11 stories, all Armenian. And in this edition, we also added two stories. The last two ones, they were originally Turkish, and we've translated them to Armenian and to English as well. Yeah, I think the main idea behind it is, as I said, just to bring them to light. And yeah, we're really happy because he's not known as a writer. And after these stories that he wrote, he was in his 20s up to his 30s, he stopped writing, which is interesting. He could have just keep writing because he's a good writer, but he just didn't. And it's good to see that he's an amazing photographer, but he's also man of the art world. He's a creator. He creates in so many levels. And this book is just one of the proofs, I guess.
So he wrote that he was a kind of writer, and then he picked up a camera and just switched almost to photography. But there's, I think, a very distinct character in these stories, and there's actually a very visual quality to them. It's almost a kind of photographic, cinematic character. You know, many of them open with a kind of framing of a scene or a character in a very vivid sense. There's a shared spirit, really, in the writing and in the photos. You can really sense the spirit of the later photographer sort of right there in the writings. It's quite interesting to read them from that perspective.
Yeah, and not only he was a writer or a photographer, he actually started off with theater. He was acting, and then the writing came, and then the photography, and while he also made some short movies, he was directing, filming, and you can actually see one of his films at the museum. It's being exhibited, but it's quite interesting to see. I'm pretty sure you felt it too. He looks at the same stuff, even if it's writing or taking photos. He looks at Istanbul, he looks at the city, nightlife, or the ghettos, or the, of course, the fishermen, or the sea. That's what he's interested in. And it's interesting, when I think about him, I always think about fishermen, I always think about sea, or I always think about the Galata Bridge. And when I read these stories, I was kind of wandering through his photographs, which is something unusual while reading a book, because I could truly see through his eyes. But interestingly, he wrote these stories first, and then he turned his camera to these people or to these scenery again. But still, it's just kind of interwoven, his photographs and his stories, as you said.
And in this latest edition, the English edition that I've seen, interspersed with the stories are some of Guler's photos. So between the stories, you have photos selected, and they often sort of rhyme actually with the theme of or plot of the stories themselves. Did he select the photos to be included, or how did the selection process go?
He wasn't included in this whole project. Like, he's too old. He was too old to do that. But we work with the archive. They didn't help us with the selection phase, but they opened their doors fully. Just take whatever you want. So it was really, Robert Koptash did it, actually. It was really overwhelming because there were too many photographs to look at, but it just worked out really good. Yeah, he also says, like, he was really scared at the beginning, but it worked out.
Well, it's done very nicely. And some of the pieces are kind of quite impressionistic, or even rather modernist in the structure. Others are more straightforward. And that kind of mixture of realism and creativity actually reminded me a little bit of Sait Faik, actually. He's this great 20th century Turkish short story writer. And stylistically, there's a very similar feel to a lot of these stories, I thought.
Exactly. When I describe his stories, this is what I think of Sait Faik. It's very similar to that. I think he was aware of his zeitgeist. He was in there. He wasn't thinking outside of that world. He was in that creative world, and he knew what was going on in that world. It's very clear that he was all about creating. I'm pretty sure he was reading Sait Faik as well. I'm not saying he copied him, but he was flowing with the zeitgeist, and he did it good. He didn't imitate, but he just did really good, I think.
And they both obviously wrote about fishermen a lot. I mean, sure. Often some of these stories are kind of just fragments of narratives, sometimes just a few pages long, often just focusing on a single character, always a man, often rather sad and kind of lonely. And that even that thematic continuity reminded me a bit of Sait Faik, actually. Also, of course, Ari Güler was an Armenian. He was of Armenian heritage. And there's a short piece in the book describing returning to his father's ancestral village, which was near Giresun on the Black Sea coast. But one thing I always think that comes through in Güler's photos, and also in the writings actually in this book, is that he doesn't actually focus much really on his sort of Armenian heritage. These kind of questions of identity weren't really highlighted at all in his work, or at least on the surface. Just wondered if you ever reflected on that, you know, without learning that Ari Güler was Armenian. It's hard to tell actually from the work that he produced. There was a kind of broadness to his work that can't really fit into a category.
Yeah, he actually didn't want to known as an Armenian. He intentionally ran away from that identity. I don't know the reason behind it, really, but he didn't want to talk about it. The last story is very surprising because we don't really know about his family story as well. And actually, I want to point out something here. After his died, there were many articles about his name, that his name was actually Aram Gularyan, and then he changed it to Aragular, which is something common that Armenians take the yan suffix or whatever and then just hide their identity, their Armenian identity. But this wasn't really the case with him, because after the adoption of the surname law, his father changed his name to Gular, which wasn't Gularyan before. It was something really else. So it wasn't his choice. He didn't really change his name because he wanted to hide that identity, or he didn't want to know known as Armenian. And then after he has died, as I said, there were just made up articles about his name and how he, as all the Armenians do, he was scared of Turkish people and hide his name, and this is what Turkey is and whatever. This is ridiculous. Actually, quite contrary, although it was known that he was Armenian, he has not much relation to the Armenian world, and he didn't say anything about the genocide or the past. Even in the story, you can't really understand what happened to his family. I think is more than anything, he was apolitical. You know, I don't know if you've heard also those discussions about how he wasn't there on Gezi protests and he didn't take any photos, and he was really close to AKP and all those things. But he wasn't close to AKP as well. He was just not into politics, and he didn't want to take sides, and he just wanted to take photos, and he didn't want to talk about him being an Armenian. So yeah. And in that last story, which is my favorite story in the book, we have also added photos from his trip with his father. And what is quite interesting is the photos doesn't also look like Aragular's photos as well. It's not his style. It's not his lens. It's not how he takes photos. So when I was looking at them, I thought, he is not comfortable with the story. He's not comfortable about being there. He's not comfortable about taking the photos of his father. Even like the story itself is written differently, and the photos also taken differently. So it's something out of himself. The photos itself, they're not photographic really strong. You wouldn't call them like they're really good photos. You wouldn't say them, but since Aragular took them, and since you feel that there's something weird about these photos and the story, you go like, okay, he doesn't feel comfortable here. I like it. That's why I like them, those photos and the story itself as well. But yeah, I don't want to talk about him being an Armenian after he passed away. He would have hated this. Yeah.
I think the classic idea of an Aragular photo is kind of those iconic images of Istanbul. They're kind of focused really on individuals or characters or street scenes uniquely framed by, you know, extraordinary surroundings of Istanbul in the 20th century. And he preferred to describe himself as a correspondent rather than an artist. But as you mentioned, there's actually not much of a really overt political message in much of the work. It's more kind of directly humanistic in a way, humanistic correspondent rather than directly political and not an artist. It's kind of a strange niche that he was in a way.
Yeah, I think he has a problem with calling himself an artist. In the preface he wrote for the book, he's like, I'm just a photojournalist. I'm not an artist. But the photos, what he looks at is also interesting in a way that he loves to work with fishermen. He loves to go to the ghetto and make photojournalism for newspapers. And I saw that at the museum too. It was amazing. In '60s, again, he goes to one of this ghettos of Istanbul that doesn't exist anymore, and he stays there for 10 days or 2 weeks, and then he explores the world. I think the reason why he finds it quite interesting is because he's not from that world. He comes from a upper middle class Armenian family. His father is a pharmacist and he gets really good education. Yeah, so I think that's why he's interested in that part of Istanbul, and that's why they're all in black and white and foggy. And even the stories, he talks about a family that their daughter is a prostitute and the pimp is the father. It's the stories that you don't want to talk about, or his photographs as the part of Istanbul you don't really see much if you don't really look at it. So that's what he does.
And he also took very different photos at times as well. He took photos of very prominent characters, Picasso, Salvador Dali, Bertrand Russell, and Winston Churchill, and President Erdogan a few years ago. So he also had that line, portrait photos of very prominent people. It's not really what we think about when we think about Aguilera, but he had that side to him as well.
It's very true. He saw Istanbul in a way nobody saw before, and that's how he has had his name. And then people realized there is this Ara Gülay, and he's a really good photographer. I think one of the keys to being a good photographer is to see something the way nobody has seen before. So I think that's how he started also making portraits of those very famous names. And he wasn't going to say no, he just didn't. And that's how he became more and more famous. I'm not saying he didn't deserve it. He, of course, deserved it all. But also, he was in the right place at the right time.
Now, while I've got you on the line, I just wonder if we could also just talk a little bit about what it's been like this year as a publisher. Arras has still got his office just off Vista Claudia Desi there. But of course, there's been an economic crisis going on, and there's been a lot of reports of publishers struggling in the last few months. How's it been for Arras? I mean, have sales been hit, or what other difficulties, if any, have there been in this tough period?
It's going to be kind of funny to say that it's been really hard after publishing this expensive book. I mean, when people see it and touch it, they'll see it's an expensive book to be published at this time. But yeah, the summer was really slow, and then the dollar hit 7, and one day we were getting papers, and then literally the next day it was like 3 times more. The price was 3 times more, and we were really scared. Now it's not promising, of course, but it's less. We were really stressed out. I should put it this way. We didn't know what to do. And then we took some books out of the program that we knew it was going to be really high printing costs. We changed programs. We're adapting. And we really have every day this talk with writers that no, we can't really do that book anymore. It's because of the paper prices. It's not really doable. We're not going to profit much. And at the same time, we're trying to keep the prices low. Basically, we're making less money. We don't want to sell books to 100 liras. But if we want to profit, that's what we should do at the moment, because really papers and printing also, because of the ink. Ink is also up to the currency. So it's, yeah, really challenging for publishing especially.
Paper is imported, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, paper, ink, yeah, they're both imported. Yeah, paper is more important. As I said, we're trying to adapt. We're changing the paper quality. We're trying to select just as good paper, but maybe like a little cheaper. But again, this summer is usually slow in the publishing because people just leave the city and they just stop buying books, which is interesting. I mean, I think people should buy books in the summer. But with September, we have more hope now with the book fair and all, but I really can't say anything anymore. Like last year when we talked about this, I'm like, everything's terrible and the price is going high and the paper, and right now it is so bad that I don't even know what to say anymore. Like they're closing down the publishing houses and people are publishing less books now, and just I don't know if people are still buying books, we're still selling books, but it's just the feeling of you don't know if the prices are going to stay here or they're going to go up, when people will stop buying books. It's just this whole unknown atmosphere that doesn't want to go under new projects or promise anything to writers or readers. Even the copyrights, is just we're more thinking about working with locals and not have translated books, because even copyrights, you have to pay like at least €1,000 or $1,000, which is now it's a thing. So yeah, it's a little complicated.
But yeah, it sounds apocalyptic. I mean, it's going to be an interesting fair in the next couple of weeks. Well, this Ara Gülay, this book is very nicely put together. I'll definitely recommend it. I mean, where can people find it?
On our website. I think after his passing away, many bookstores have purchased it. I think they can find it all around now easily.
All around Istanbul.
I think so, yeah.
If people buy it online, you ship internationally, is that right?
We do. Yeah, if you cover the shipping costs, we do ship it, yes. For international buyers, it's not that expensive because I think this book is 80 Turkish lira or something. They will, think about it, they will buy this book for $10. Can you buy something like this for $10 anywhere? You can't. So with the shipping cost, it will come to maybe $30 or $40, which is
pretty good.
Pretty good for this book again. So for international buyers, this is nothing. We usually recommend them to buy more books. If they're buying something with one shipment, they should just like buy more books. Then it would be really cheap for them. Yeah, okay. But for Turkey as well, we sell the books from our website for 25% off. So it's a pretty good deal.
That was Laura Sara. Many thanks to her. And if you like what you heard, check out the archives to find an episode that we published with Laura last year, discussing Aris's publishing work and the very lovely book it released in English last year, Infidel Quarter, by the author Migadic Margosyan. Remember to consider signing up as a Turkey Book Talk member if you enjoy the podcast and want to help support it. Membership gets you access to transcripts in English and Turkish of every interview as it's published, as well as the entire Turkey Book Talk archive of over 70 conversations so far. Members also get a hefty 30% discount on a catalogue of over 200 books on Turkey and Ottoman history, published by IB Taurus, and access to an archive of 231 book reviews written by me, covering Turkish history and politics, literature, and various other things. To become a member and get all that, just pledge a minimum of $3 per episode via Turkey Book Talk's official Patreon account, and if you're personally not sure, then why not consider signing up as a gift for a friend or colleague who may be interested? Indeed, Christmas is just around the corner, and no doubt a Turkey Book Talk membership makes for a very festive Christmas gift. Also, do please rate or review Turkey Book Talk on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you use. You can follow via Twitter or like the Facebook page to stay fully updated with new episodes, and you can send any recommendations, feedback, or abuse to williamjohnarmstrong@gmail.com. There won't be a new episode of Turkey Book Talk in a couple of weeks because that coincides with Christmas Day, and no doubt I'll be tucking into a very different kind of turkey. But there will be an episode the week after, which will actually be the first episode of the new year. So until then, thanks a lot for listening, and indeed thanks for listening throughout this year. I think we've put out some pretty good episodes over the course of the year, and I'm already looking forward to putting out even more in 2019. So again, thank you very much for listening.